so Ovale welcomes Edward with an old friend.
It's true, I am an old friend. So I've been coming to Ovale for...
Do you want a seat?
No, that's all. Actually, if you could bring me my Zimmer frame. But I've been coming to Ovale for a long time, actually, and I've always felt very, very comfortable here. I come here regularly, and I always have. A distinction that I'm very, very proud of. I was the first ever guest poet at Ovale. When was that called? That was
7.5 years ago.
2007, I think, was it? Yeah. So. And this is my first guest poet spot since. I'm delighted to be here. Now let's start off with a poem called Mostly For You. Love, will you come and sit with me here a while? It's time I told you of my indiscretions. I must tell you of the other woman. Her name is Emily. Emily Dickinson. Maybe you've heard of her. Love, I really do wish I'd told you sooner of my infidelity. Of all the times, crazed with want, I've sought out the embrace of her collected poems. I confess to you the hunger of my fingers for the worn pages, and so often falling into such sleep, face pressed upon them after the late hours we'd spent. Oh, but love, you cannot feel jealousy, not for Emily, and should cast no fleeting glances in scorn or contempt toward her place there on the shelf. You must swallow down no inward sighs of loss in her name, as my love, there is no loss. And even now, you must know, this has been a love poem mostly for you, only somewhat for her. Keeping. She has thought of it, of leaving the house, starting out afresh someplace far from there. A place that never felt those footsteps, where nothing knew that touch of hand, where the air doesn't remember his breath. But she thought of what she'd be leaving if she did it, just upped and went. Thought of all the clothes still folded in drawer chests and hanging up in wardrobes, from them the unmistakable scent since gone. It all left undisturbed, untouched from that day burned forever in her memory. The time, the taste of strong tea on her tongue, the knock, the face of the young officer on her doorstep, cap clenched in his hands, voice shaking in the morning chill. Mostly, though, she thought of the shelves on the bookcases, all the books he'd read in his lifetime, all those pages through which his fingers had passed, rested gently on, smudged with their natural oils. Pages where perhaps flakes of skin are left behind, preserved as a leaf or a flower may be preserved. A piece of him, something to stay for, worth keeping, she'd think. I wrote this poem after reading a book by Kevin Higgins, and I think it shows. I think the style of it, and it shows. It's called "The Great Poet's Only Complaint." So commendably, he came to terms with the awful pea-green carpets, and even worse, matching sepia curtains of an upstairs flat. Its single, mildewed window overlooking a side of town the sun had a falling out with years ago and has had nothing to do with since. So so graciously having accepted those cold water mornings, night snap of mouse traps, and the weak brew of reused tea bags. This great poet's only complaint is the trail of missed opportunities going on for miles and miles his life has denied him. That long list of wonderful things he could have been, would have been only for choosing not to be. All those things which from the pedestal of his ego he might refer to as the necessary sacrifices for his art. Those things without which each poem remains only another classic tearjerker without a beginning. Some of you know that I'm from Limerick, and some of you that I don't know won't know that, but this poem is very much a Limerick poem. It's called On the Upside. Our Lady Limerick's high street shops and the pubs once packed out, even on flogging Monday nights, are closing down. The trademark Irish smirk has suddenly slipped with affluence getting laid off. Penny's is the new Brown Thomas, Dominic Street the new Cruises Street. And so what to do now? Do you turn back to God now the elastic has snapped back? Take him up on his offer of forgiveness? Do you rehang your sacred heart in the kitchen between unemployed graduates? Go banging on the church doors now the holes are ever gradually reappearing in the kids' shoes? Now that today's bread is always yesterday's, despite what Mr. Brennan is saying. Should you go looking everywhere you can for consolation, for reprieves and olive branches? Is there any worth pointing out that on the upside, it's raining much less than it used? The sunny spells in December and March were an unexpected treat. Meteorologists are the new economists, it seems, as the TV3 weatherman smiles and winks, flirts and dances with mesmerized cameras, as if to suggest an Angela's Ashes, minus all the shit weather, would not be such a downer of a read. I'm going to do a little seasonal section now because it's not going to be long now before the leaves start falling off the trees. And it's a time of year that I love anyway. So I have a few poems about that time. This poem is called The Leaves. It's made up of two poems. The first of which is called The Despair of Leaves. The mischief-making grey hands of winter have felt up just about everything now as there go some leaves, perhaps even the last, to their final dance. But the wind no more that silk-handed foxtrotter of summer months, when its every touch had a lover's unequivocal warmth. And the second is the miracle of leaves. Without better explanation back then, I decided the wind collected them, gathered up every last one, and as no one was looking, pegged them all back on the bare arms of their trees. Its swirling moan, the whispered incantation, restoring their green blood, mending the impossible chiropractics of spines, without rest through days and nights to the miracle moment they're all as they were, good as new, like they've never fallen to their deaths. This next one is ambiguously titled Autumn. Summer and winter eye one another up with violent intent. Autumn is a schoolyard playground a frontier battlefield. A menacing tension hangs in the air as leaves on trees dwindle, remaining birds singing only half-hearted songs amidst the gray-blue grapple of daytime sky. We know too well how it turns in an instant. Just a few congested grumbles in the clouds to rain flogging on roofs, wind rattling windows, to mist, to frost, to ice. It's about to turn again, any moment now, and then the days won't let up. Reveling in the cracking of bones, delighting in the purple grey of skin, singing in every ear its numbing winter song. And time is just for waiting then, for awaiting. Perhaps the sight of a wasp or butterfly indoors. Any newsbearer of summer's survival, its return to contest the spring.
You're kind of a little bit unsure of whether to. It's okay, you can wait till the end. It's great.
Because
perfect, thanks for that, Jared. That's relieved my paranoia greatly, actually. Thank you. This poem's a little bit ranty, and I'd like to dedicate it now to Jared. I think it's appropriate to do so. Yeah, it's called The Future. When the summer arrives late as ever, by then you've forgotten why you awaited it so expectantly. As it comes flouncing into the horizon, suddenly you can remember nothing of why you thought the winter such a disagreeable bastard. Then find yourself pleading with daylight to recede, sun to vanish. Take with it the garish glow it's given everything, including your own skin. Suddenly now you're ready to admit that you fantasized in autumn of putting all the leaves back on the stick-limbed trees. One by one, paint them all green if that's what it takes. How there were springs you dreamt of running through meadows, stamping each and every blossom back into the dirt it rose up from. You're ready at last now to stare the future in the face, see the lie in its winning smile and bedroom eyes, the absolute certainty that the moment it finally turns up, it will have already broken every promise it ever made. At some point it will get a bit cheerier. I'm not sure what that point is yet. thanks, Rakib. Caleb has a laughing disorder. The name of this one is Learning to Walk. There must be a course they all do, take in secret, I'm sure of it. A universal rite of passage at, say, that ripe age of 16. A diploma equivalent for which they disappear into the high mountains or deep woods for the intensive training. Learn to walk with books balanced on their heads, then fine antique vases. To tread upon the air a centimetre above the ground so as never to stumble or stub a toe in a crack in the pavement. I've been watching them in the streets, how they go by, accentuating their exquisite shapes, their contours and such perfect rhythmic strides, and each beneath their own personal spotlight of sunshine. I've been watching them as they walk and decided this. There must be a course that they take. There just must be. I mean,
Are we to believe they were just born with their ability to walk all over us? Oh, this is the point where it gets cheerier. A corpse in snow. Her parents gave her the name Summer, remembering at the hospital the kind nurse with round glasses and big smile who called her Sunshine. In an always full maternity hospital, maybe she called all the babies this. Now just 17 years old, here she lies, just a corpse in snow, limp stiff, naked flesh turned powder blue, and eyes dilated, stricken, a meaningless struggle stark in the pink rawness of her slender wrists and in the pale contusion on her jaw, in the gaping wound below her chin, the clean slice of a winter's frozen blade. I suppose the olive branch it just can't get any darker now. I think a lot of people grow up if you don't grow up in the middle of nowhere, a lot of people grow up near somebody like this person. I suppose somebody that is just a bit misunderstood and just likes to keep to themselves, but you can't really understand that as a kid. And it usually turns into a similar situation to this. And it's a poem, this is a poem called The Witch. To you, strange and spurned woman, in that gloomy, crumbling old house at the street's end, the one with the high and rusting wrought iron gates, weed-infested garden, and all those cats sitting in the dirty windows, goes this, my apology. Necessary still, though, all of 20-something years late. For listening to the story, and for believing it. For filling nightmares with you, images of a slime green face glowing through the steam of a big black cauldron. For shivering at the sight of your grey eye peering out of a slit between the curtains. For fearing the curse you put on me, and the only real curse, the one my fear put on you. And for spreading the story, passing it down years after, when I knew it had all been just a hoax. In the end, you died alone from your old age. But for years while you lived, I was part of an awful mob, was pinning you to a stake, spitting flaming words on you, watching you burn. Poet's sudden change of fortunes. The family with the Alsatian that never stops barking has just moved and taking with them his incessant insomnia. The weather is generally good, great at times, very untypical of February and March. Rain restricted to a few minor showers.
Lately, the wife and he find only petty things to squabble over, and those strategies to cut down on sundry expenditures have been a gradual but very noticeable success. Even the kids doing their bit, and now that holiday to wherever this August looks just that little bit more a possibility, if not a likelihood. There's a new postman, and he sings. Isn't half bad either. Knows pretty much everything by Sinatra. Even this evening, while driving home after a relatively stress and complication-free day at the office, 5 of the 6 traffic lights were green, traffic itself non-existent. It turns out Mark got a B+ on his maths exam, an overwhelming improvement, and it's finally off between Jessica and that Thompson boy he never approved of. Things he can't help noticing are looking up in just about every way. Already, he's looking forward to some time writing nothing at all. I love when poets at reading say this line. 2 last poems. Noise. Each day he'd sit by the piano composing beautiful music. The waste paper basket beside him full with his most recent life's work. His life's most recent work. Some say that when asked once who inspires him, he answered no one. Called Brahms, Miles Davis, and Jan Johansson all failures. Pausing a few seconds before adding that the only task of the musician is to create a sound even sweeter than the silence he breaks. Anything less, he knows, is mere noise. For the past 20 years now, he's been meaning to take an afternoon off, called by the neighbors to apologize. So I'll finish with this poem that maybe, well, a lot of you do know, but I like reading this poem. So thanks very much for listening. Thanks very much for having me here, Paul. And this one is We'll Always Have Paris. We could say to ease the moment, we'll always have Paris. And whatever at the time that meant, let's remember here that we had such bliss. Yes, I know that now it's all so sad, but we should find some compensatory way to look at this. My darling, aren't you glad we'll always have Paris? Always for one thing, that really glorious kiss. Was it Arc de Triomphe or La Tour Eiffel? We'll always have Paris, though the rest's gone a bit to hell. But honey, listen, I'll explain how it's all going to be okay. We'll always have Paris, always have champagne on the Champs-Élysées, in spite of all the other things we're sure to miss. Always have Notre Dame, even after this big and awful crisis. Always have the love we made because the Louvre was pretty lame. We'll always have Paris, complaining about how steep the Moulin Rouge is, walking back to the hotel under stars and moonlight. We'll always have Paris, memories to put any woes or regrets to right. So stop. Don't say it. That we were never even there. Say we'll always have Paris. My darling, with you gone, I'll be saying every day, we always have Paris.